Right now, it is time to bring in our good friend Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. We talk about food and anything that's related to food as well. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. And what's the weather today? It's pretty dismal around
here. It's going to be that way. All clouds. We've got clouds, and we're going to have showers off and on most of the week.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I got to get out of the house. I'm really feeling stuck. And interestingly, well, this is something cosmic. Several things have come, I don't know how to say this even, because I don't really believe in coincidence, but Naples has come up in conversation, the city in Italy. And Salerno, I always think of them as the twin cities. They're less than an hour apart. Naples, of course, is much bigger. But I've been missing them so much. And then Jill mentioned it this morning. Very unusually, I got a book royalties from one of my Southern Italian cookbooks called The Southern Italian Table, which I self-published. And it's available only on digital. And by the way, I love the cover on the digital version more than the real cover. And it's Zia Delia, it's Cecilia's Aunt Delia's kitchen. And Delia only died a couple of years ago in her mid-late 90s. So I knew Delia very well. Anyway, I'm getting royalties on that book. So all these things are coming up about Naples, and it's really making me miss Naples more than ever. And my barber, who is from Salerno originally, I mean, he's been here for 60 years, almost, he told me the other day that there's a big COVID outbreak in Naples and Salerno, and there wasn't one earlier when we heard about how bad it was in Italy. It wasn't that part of Italy. It was the northwest part of Italy and a little on the north. But anyway, it wasn't in the south. Now it's in the south, And I looked this up the other day, and it's really bad in Naples, and I don't know what has happened in the several days since I looked it up, but the mayor was talking, the governor of the province of Campania, of the region of Campania, I should say, which is like the governor of a state here, was talking about totally closing up the whole region. So it's pretty awful. Anyway, we're safe here in Brooklyn, pretty much. If you stay away from certain neighborhoods. But I'm staying home, and I'm cooking incessantly. So I'm missing Naples, and now I'm trying to reproduce some Neapolitan flavors, but without pasta, rice, potatoes, or even bread to mop up the sauce, because that's my diet now. So I have come up with a few things. For instance, I have been craving Neapolitan meatballs, first fried and then cooked briefly in sauce. Gives the sauce a little oomph, and it's good to put on the meatballs. Without pasta, I could do that. However, Neapolitan meatballs have a significant amount of bread in them. And my butcher, who I trust in everything, it's the only place I would go for prepared foods. He's from Calabria. He cooks a lot like I do. He makes the best eggplant parmigiana. He makes great meatballs. Now he has gluten-free meatballs. I said, Rocco, is there no bread in them? He says, yeah, but it's gluten-free bread. So I don't know what that means. So I'm not buying his meatballs, but I'm craving Neapolitan meatballs. So yesterday, I decided, why can't I make hamburgers the way I would normally make meatballs, except make it in a thick patty, and I'd fry them. Even without a bread content, they've got to get crusty. And sure enough, they did. So for 1 pound of ground beef, I like chuck. I like at least 85-15, meaning 15% fat. Even better would be 20% fat. And so into that, I put in one very large clove of garlic minced fine. about 3 tablespoons-ish of chopped parsley, 3 tablespoons-ish of Parmigiano Reggiano, a whole teaspoon of salt. I decided to go brave. It wasn't too much in the end. And I would say a good quarter teaspoon or more. Round, I didn't measure, but a significant amount of freshly ground black pepper. So I mixed that all up with a fork. I didn't want to mash up the meat. You know, when you're making burgers, you don't want it too mashy. When you're making meatballs, in fact, you have to because you want to incorporate the bread in with the meat. But in this case, I didn't have to, and I was going to do a more quickly cooked thing. So I just broke it all up and mixed it all up with the tines of a fork, not mashing it. And then I beat up one egg separately and then poured that in and mixed that in. And that was it. So it was garlic, parsley, cheese, salt, pepper, and an egg. I made 4 patties out of that. First starting by making a meatball and then squishing them down into patties. And instead of my usual, when I make hamburgers, just putting them in a super-duper hot cast iron pan, I put a little bit of olive oil in the pan because I wanted them to come out crusty. I don't know. It seemed more Neapolitan. I did that, and they were sensational, I have to say. Now, we're not eating pasta, potatoes, blah, blah, blah. But we're eating a lot of vegetables. And I've mentioned this for weeks now. Not my favorite vegetable, but one of our favorite low-carbohydrate vegetables is fennel, which you can eat raw, by the way, if you just want to crunch on something. But I cook it. And I've been cooking it one way. I've talked about it endlessly. And now I'm back to a method that I was doing back in Salerno a lot. Because at the end of the summer, Salerno is the fennel capital of the world, I'm sure. You can't believe how many fields of fennel there are, because they grow it in very rich soil between Naples and Salerno. And in fact, Campania was originally called Campania Felix, the bountiful, you could say, countryside, or the happy countryside, because vegetables grew so well. Anyway, with a lot of fennel around, we had a lot of fennel. And now, this is the season for fennel, even though we get fennel all year, certainly in the Northeast. When I was a kid, in my family, we did eat fennel, but only raw. At the end of Thanksgiving dinner, that was a big deal to me. I liked that. My aunt served that. It's very Southern Italian to end a meal with fennel because it's supposedly digestive. I don't know if it is or not. It's high fiber. Maybe that's what they mean by digestive. Anyway, I learned this recipe from a TV show that I watched every morning when I was living in Salerno because in a cooking show, I knew the vocabulary. I could understand. And he was demonstrating. So between knowing the food vocabulary and the cooking vocabulary and watching it, I was one of the few shows I could watch and really enjoy and learn from, because this chef, he was a real chef, like in a restaurant, but he did home cooking. And he made fennel with onion and tomato, and he made it as a vegetable. I started making it as a condiment, so to speak, a sauce for pasta, by cutting up the fennel into small pieces, you know, just like cubes. If you cut across wedges of fennel, you'll get small enough pieces. And saute that with chopped onion, and you don't have to chop it fine at all, and just for about 3-4 minutes, and then add some canned tomatoes, or, I mean, I guess you could use fresh tomato, but I prefer the canned tomato. I would say for a large bulb of fennel, You want to have one small onion, and depending on the size of the tomatoes in the can, let's say a cup of canned tomato with a little bit extra liquid from the can. And you mash that up separately, in a bowl separately. And when the, after 5 minutes of sautéing the fennel and onion, you put in the mashed tomato, cover the pan, let it, and salt and pepper, and cover the pan and let it simmer for probably 15, 20 minutes at least. Now, as a vegetable, however, I cut the fennel and onion differently. I cut the fennel into wedges through the core. Now, if your fennel is fresh, you don't have to do anything but rinse it off. However, if it's been sitting around or it's a little crinkled on the surface for whatever reason, I take a vegetable peeler. I don't want to... I've seen people peel off the outside pieces of fennel. What a waste when you can take a vegetable peeler and just peel down the surface of those outside... you know, we say it's a bulb, but it's not a bulb. And I don't even know what you call it botanically, but it's where the leaves are all joined are just above the soil. And those are like, you know, on celery, for instance, you know, has the white part at the bottom. Well, in this case, the bottom part is much more significant than the top part of the fennel, which I throw away or do something with, but not eat it as is. In any case, so if you clean up the fennel that way, cutting off the stems and the fronds at an angle at the top, you can then cut the fennel in half through the root end, through the core end, and then cut those halves into wedges. I mean, you can do each half can be four wedges, and you'll end up with eight wedges. Depends on how good a cutter you are, how big the fennel bulb is. But and this will determine, by the way, the size of the wedge will determine how long you're going to cook it. So put it in a pan with onion. Heat up some olive oil in the bottom of the pan. Put in the fennel. Turn it in the heated olive oil, not hot olive oil, medium heat. Turn it in the olive oil, and then throw in one small onion. You can slice it the normal in half moon way. I sometimes like to slice it by cutting off the root end altogether and slicing it from top to bottom, meaning the opposite of normal, and it'll come out little crescents of onion. Nice. And toss that around with the fennel. And this shouldn't be more than 3-4 minutes of tossing it around in hot oil. And then you can add your crushed tomato. Look, if you want to open a can of crushed tomato, if you use crushed tomatoes, here's a place to use them. A cup of crushed tomato. I don't buy crushed tomatoes, but I have canned tomatoes, and I crush them myself. Anyway, that's it. Salt, pepper. Cover the pan. These wedges will take at least 20 minutes to become tender. The way to know if it's done is take the point of a little knife and stick it into the core portion of these wedges and see how easily it goes in. It should go in fairly easily. I make this ahead and let it just stand at room temperature until we're ready to eat it, and then I reheat it. And if you find there's too much liquid in them, this should be cooked covered. I may not have said that. And after 20 minutes, if it's tender and there's a significant, maybe too much amount of liquid in the pan, uncover it and let the liquid cook down a bit. So I must say, if I say so myself, it was sensational with these Neapolitan hamburgers. Yeah, it really was. It was a good combination. And I'm without pasta, you know, the mainstay of the Neapolitan diet. I got irritated the other day because what's his name? Alton Brown misquoted Sophia Loren, and he said, by the way, is in my book, Naples at Table. You know, this is what I'm famous for, by the way. I don't know. Maybe people out there don't know this. I'm famous for two things. being a blabbermouth, and writing about Naples and the south of Italy when nobody was paying attention to it.
And you know that it's for folks, when this interview, when we do finish this show and we post it up on demand, we put a link at the that book is available in a digital edition on Kindle now.
Well, the one that's available is the follow-up to Naples at Table. The follow-up is called The Southern Italian Table, and it covers the entire South, by my definition. It's all the regions of the South are covered in this book. And in fact, Jill was mentioning this to me. She said, oh, I love the way, you know, in Naples at Table, you talk about cooking sausage. By the way, sausage are on my diet. So we've been eating sausage fairly regularly. My butcher makes great Italian-style sausage, hot, sweet, and on Fridays, for Saturday as well, fresh fennel sausage, which I love. And just, you know, some fennel seed in it gives it a little oomph. And I've been cooking them, however, in a way that's outlined in the Southern Italian Table, which is a way, believe it or not, this was on the roadside. There are roadside stands in Calabria, in the mountains especially, not by the shore, that specialize, that sell sausage and peppers. Is this where we got the sausage and pepper thing from? You know, I was always, one of the big shocks of moving to Northwest Connecticut was that at church fairs, they served fried pizza with tomato sauce on top, which is totally Neapolitan, sold on the street even, and because in Naples they fry on the street. But actually, nowadays, it's rare to find a place that's actually frying. But the fried pizza will be out there, in a glass box waiting for you to take it and eat it as you walk down the street. In any case, so these are Neapolitan things, sausage and peppers. And fortunately, peppers are on the low-carb diet that I'm on. I can't overdo it, but I eat peppers. And onions actually are not low carb, but if you're only using a little bit to flavor something, you can get away with it. And tomato sauce, of course, is totally allowable. And so my next thing is going, I keep saying I'm going to do this to Bob, because Bob loves, maybe his favorite thing in the world is spaghetti alla matriciana, which is spaghetti with a tomato sauce flavored with a pancetta or guanciale, but I prefer pancetta, actually. I can buy guanciale easily nowadays, but any good guanciale, too. But anyway, whatever, one or the other. And I put some onion in mine and an ever so slight bit of hot pepper. And that's his favorite pasta on spaghetti. In fact, even in places in Italy, when they have this on the menu in Rome, it's really a Roman dish, not at all Neapolitan, but it's tomato sauce. It's often not on spaghetti, and Bob will actually request it on spaghetti, but he's not getting spaghetti. However, I think I'm going to make the amatriciana sauce and then poach eggs in it, a la eggs in purgatory. Eggs in purgatory is eggs poached in tomato sauce. Simple tomato sauce as usual. But mine's going to have onion and pancetta in it. So, I don't know. The only problem with this dish is, what are we going to eat it on? I mean, you can't have it on pasta. You can't have blah, blah, blah. So I was thinking maybe frying slices of eggplant. It'll almost be like eggplant parmigiana. And I have made this, by the way, with baking, in fact, slices of eggplant, and then topping it just with mozzarella and sauce. It's delicious. It's not parmigiana. You know, when I make a real parmigiana, or Rocco, my butcher, makes a real parmigiana, we do it the same. We use thin slices of eggplant, dipped in egg and flour, battered actually, and fried, and layered, I would say an inch and a half thick, maybe even a little thicker, but they're very thin slices of eggplant. And and Rocco's sauce tastes just like my sauce, I got to say. I don't buy his sauce, but I'm happy to get it on meatballs when he sells his meatballs and sauce, et cetera, and on this eggplant. And with a modest amount of mozzarella and a modest amount of grated cheese. And I bet you, I have never asked him what cheese he uses, but I bet you it's Grana Padana, not Parmigiano, or perhaps Grana Padana mixed with Pecorino. It's not all Pecorino either. So, you know, I trust him.
I like the recipe. My problem with people with eggplant is like you, the way you described it, slice it thin, and then you can stack it and
yeah, then you can stack it.
And it's easy to eat. It tastes unbelievable.
Well, let me say, there are many different ways of doing a Parmigiana di melanzane. I think I've outlined at least two in Naples at Table, and I'm sure at least one in Southern Italian Table. And just to have a slice of eggplant, could be fried, could be baked, whatever, with cheese and tomato sauce, or even a tomato, a slice of tomato, you know, is I've gotten that when ordering Parmigiana. In Naples, very often, the eggplant is just fried and could be quite greasy on the plate. Mm. I don't really like that so much. On the Amalfi Coast, they like to bread and fry eggplant. And I love that. I mean, I love a slice of, you know, a half-inch slice of eggplant dipped in first flour, then egg, and then breadcrumbs and fried. That is divine food. So, but I wouldn't stack it up to make a Parmigiana.
Yeah.
I would just put cheese and sauce on top of that to make a big slice. I mean, that's delicious. I'm not eating breadcrumbs or flour, so I can't do that right now. But I could have a, you know, fried eggplant slice or a baked eggplant slice and put sauce and cheese on it. So I'm getting myself hungry.
Getting me hungry.
I have not eaten anything yet.
What did I have this morning? I had my father's old-time favorite. At 3:30 this morning when I got up, I chopped up some onion and sweated it a little bit, and then put a couple of eggs in there, some salt and pepper, scrambled it up, and had some eggs and onions for breakfast.
Wow, you just inspired me. I have to go to the trouble of making myself eggs, but I can do that. So I have a very clean kitchen at the moment. I'm always in the morning looking for something. It's not going to – I tell you something. Here's something I haven't done yet, but I'm going to. Maybe I'll do it right now after I get off the air. I bought some peppered and smoked mackerel in a vacuum package, and I'd never bought this product before. But I thought, well, I like fish for breakfast. I like smoked fish. It's like kippers, you know. And mackerel and herring, I believe, are in the same family of fish. So it's a dark flesh, fatty fish. So I bought this, and I ate a little bit of it, and I've decided I don't really like it very much. And I don't want to waste it. So what to do? I'm recalling back. I don't think this is in any of my cookbooks, but this is something that we did in the 60s, whipping up a mousse of sardines with cream cheese. I'm not sure what appliance we would have used in the 60s, but I could do this in my mini processor, and I happen to have some cream cheese in the house. And I think it wouldn't be bad. And I have cream. If I have to loosen this up, I'll add a little bit of heavy cream and see what happens. So I'll have sort of a mackerel spread. Now I just got to figure out what to spread it on.
Oh, that's right. You can't have bread.
Can't have bread. I've been, you know, endive, cucumber.
I was going to say, but I'm sort of
out of endive and cucumber today.
Oh, well.
Well, I'll figure it out, you know. I could eat it with a fork, maybe.
I was going to say.
We'll see.
Nah, hell of a fork, a spoon.
Or a spoon, yeah. Well, I like, you know, it's a funny thing. I prefer a fork for most things. I don't know what that is, that I don't like to eat out of a spoon unless it's like ice cream or soup, of course. So I don't know. It's one of my peculiarities, I guess.
Well, we all got them. I tell you that I like spoons, especially because I eat chickpeas a lot, chickpeas and tomatoes, and to eat it with a fork is just a pain in the rear end. So I use.
Well, I can see that.
I hate
you could do what my mother would do with peas, which are impossible to eat any which way you eat them, I think. But she used to just pick them out, put them in a little pile on the side of the plate. Bob is always reminding me of this. I'm not sure why this sticks in his brain so much, but my mother did do that. She did not like peas. She served us peas, interestingly. And in fact, one, I haven't had this in years, but I used to love when she put Le Sueur peas in a salad right out of the can. Remember Le Sueur peas?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Green Giant, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Silver can, I remember.
I was a kid brought up on frozen packages of vegetables, unfortunately.
We always ate fresh. We were weird. We ate salad. Even in the 50s, we ate salad. That was, friends who came for dinner were really freaked out by salad.
My father was the same way. We had, when you had dinner, you had a salad to start, and you had your entree, and then you had something for dessert. And when you ate breakfast, damn it, he always put wheat germ on the breakfast.
maybe this was a Borscht Belt thing. My father looked forward to going to the Catskill hotels, not so much for the comics like your father, although he loved the comics, but also it gave him permission to eat sliced bananas with heavy cream. You know, Alan King, the comedian, when asked at the Concord, he was ordering breakfast, and he looked at the menu and he said to the waiter, "I'll take it."
That's right. If you never went to the Concord, folks, you won't understand, but if you went to the Concord, it sticks out in my mind. I used to love going to the Concord, not for the pool, not for any, not to see my father perform, but for the food. Okay.
Well, yeah, because the Alan King remark was that you were allowed to order everything on the menu if you wanted.
That's exactly right.
You know, some of these fussy people would order something and they'd take one bite and say, "I don't like it," and then order something else, and then something else. Until they learned if they ordered all five things in them, they wouldn't have to wait for the second one to come, the third one to come. They could just have the five things on the table. And at my parents' table with their heavy eating friends, sometimes all this food would disappear.
All right, Arthur.
So I was going to talk about shrimp.
We can put that on next week.
But we'll do that next week. And I was thinking also, Naples. By the way, one of the not-so-coincidental things, Naples, was that there was a special section on exhibits in the New York Times yesterday. And the whole front page of this special section was a painting of Vesuvio from a window across the Bay of Naples, and I actually recognized the railing in this picture, in this painting, as being from the Grand Parker Hotel, which does in fact it's not in the fray down by the bay, so to speak. I didn't mean to rhyme, but it's up on a ridge, and it does face Vesuvius just like that. And I've stayed there, and it gave me extra missing.
All right, Arthur.
And we have to go, I know.
Have a good week.
Yes, you too. Everybody stay safe.
All right, take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robinhood Radio. You can find him also on demand, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. And on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.